In the studio, I've got two councillors this morning. We've got Lisa Thompson, our local councillor. Good morning.
Kia ora, good morning.
And we've got Mike here, who's the councillor for Tamahere, but you have a place over here in Raglan, I presume.
Yes, I do, and I try to spend as much time out here as I can. It's I love Raglan. It's a great place, and this radio station, I'll give you a plug. It's a great station. So nice to be here, and good morning.
So there was a community board meeting, which we haven't talked to either you or Dennis about yet, Lisa, but we'll get into some of that stuff a little bit later. We've got the annual plan, which is the council spending plan, all being worked on at the moment. And we've already talked in the past about how changes at government level have forced the council away from doing their big 10-year plan look ahead, and you're just doing it's called an enhanced annual plan, and you're just looking at the next year, basically.
That's right, 2024-25.
Yeah, so my question is this plan just a continuation of the old long-term plan, or is it the first year of the proposed long-term plan? And so are we expecting changes, or what's the story there?
I'll step into this one first, but look, it's the first year of the new 10-year plan. It is pretty much in line with what we were going to do. So a lot of work's gone into it, and it's very different than the last 10-year plan or the last year of the last 3-year plan. But it's the reason we've gone to this enhanced annual plan is we cannot look out the next year or the year after. Given our current situation, we just don't have enough information, particularly around this three waters thing or the waters issue. And so we cannot meaningfully make a 10-year plan.
It would be like forecasting into a really bad storm without being able to navigate your way through it. Mm. And like Mike has just said, around the three waters, but it's also around central government funding into our roading.
Which is still not a known thing, is it?
We don't know. It has been 50%, and we don't know what it's going to be. That could change. Now, we hope it doesn't.
Someone was saying $7 billion has been shifted at the last community board meeting. Was that Alison Diaz, the chief financial officer, or was that...
She is our chief financial officer.
Someone said something about $7 billion being diverted into roads of national significance, presumably away from councils.
Away from councils.
So is that the proposal at the moment?
We don't know.
I was wondering where that number came from. But they have put out a draft roading statement or something.
Yes, it doesn't give detail. It's got lots of aspirational, but
and
it doesn't give detail.
It's the roads of significance, 15 roads of significance across the nation. And so we
do know that that's something they're likely to prioritise, though, rather than council stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. They've put it out there, but we don't know the details of it.
They have listed the 15 roads they're going to work on.
Yeah.
And that's just going back to their previous program. So they had that in place. And some of that's good.
6 years ago.
Yeah. Some of that's actually good stuff. Or I think it should be bigger and more, but they shouldn't be undercutting local government in the process.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. Well, we're probably not going to get everything we want.
No, and so that's why we've had to go to our enhanced annual plan for the year. Because of that uncertainty. And, of course, the icing on the cake about the decision to quickly pivot into an annual plan instead of the first year of the 3 years of the NLTP was also Watercare will be withdrawing their work with us in 2026. So, of course, our work around our three waters across our district, including Raglan, with our upgrade of our water treatment plant, and that's underway as we speak, will continue. But that uncertainty around our next steps would be really unfair for us to lock in 3 years of proposed rates increases, whatever those might be, to our community when we would likely have to go back in a year's time when we have more certainty around funding, other funding options. So we felt that this was the best decision that fit Waikato District Council.
Okay, so let's talk about the rate rise for the general rate, 13.75, have I got that number
That's
correct?
Right.
That's a big number. Not as big as Hamilton.
Not as big as I wanted.
But not as...
Because tell us about that. 15.
Okay. I wanted 20 because I wanted people to realise, to get engagement's really difficult. Like we had our Tamahere meeting for this the other day, we had three people turn up.
Okay.
So people just aren't engaged. And so I was pushing for a higher rate rise to try and get people engaged, because rating, as I think you've said on the station, it doesn't work anymore.
Mm.
You know, we cannot fund our assets we've got a $2.3 billion asset. We cannot, and the wastewater area is in major need of significant investment, hundreds of millions of dollars. We can't afford it.
Mm.
So rating is not a way out of this situation. So we need central government to come to the party. And at the moment, they're not. This government's done what we sort of feared they would. They've canned Three Waters, which was flawed, but they haven't put anything else up.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't seem to have a plan B.
No, they don't have a plan B.
And that's what we thought they'd do, and I was hopeful they might be a bit more innovative, but no, that's what they've done.
At the moment, it seems like they just put everything back on the councils.
Yes. They have put everything back
with hand-wavy ideas. And I know that they haven't come up with all the details yet, but hand-wavy ideas that councils might work together somehow.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And
so
our experience that we've had previously when we were looking at Three Waters provision across the region with Hamilton and Waipa and Waikato District Council, obviously that didn't work out. So I'm hoping that across the region there'll be more visionary opportunities to collaborate. But that's all up in the air as
That's very difficult when you're talking about councils who don't work together particularly well.
And also when you've got a district council versus more urban-based councils like Hamilton City Council. So we're all bespoke in terms of the challenges and the opportunities that we have in our communities across territorial authorities. But it's a real challenge. So
our last attempt at this in 2017-18 didn't work. We tried with Waipa and Hamilton to get a water system together and it failed because Waipa pulled out at the last minute. And that's when we went down this path. Actually, Waikato's done pretty well.
We've been quite innovative when you think about that, our relationship with Watercare.
Watercare's been a success.
But
that's stopping because...
Yeah, because they're pulling out to focus on Auckland because of what they've got to deal with up there. And so they can't cope with us as well. And that's a big loss for us.
It's a really big loss. And they're not only just pulling out of Waikato District, but all of their... businesses or contracts across the country outside of Auckland. So it's not just us.
Wow, okay, all right. So that's, and I'm not going to ask what's going to happen next because I don't think anyone knows yet. Yeah, all right. But I want to go back to the 13.75. So, Mike, you said you wanted it to be bigger to get people's attention. It was settled at that. That still seems quite big.
It's not big.
Compared to previous. But the people listening will be going, no, hold on, for me that's big.
It's big for people. Look, I understand the pain it's going to put a lot of people into or through, but really it's just an inflation adjustment. We're not getting anything extra. I mean, construction costs have risen at more than 10% annually for the last 3 years. This is just catch up. We need, you know, the price of us doing business, our waters and roading, our big spends. This is just a catch up. It's nothing.
It's actually not adding anything new into the mix.
And so we're trying to increase our services delivery into roading a bit. Not enough for me. A bit, and we're trying to deliver good services across the board with this budget. I think that we're being told by the executive that that's what we'll be able to do. That would be a very good thing if we can. I think it's not enough to do. Like I say, rating just does not give us enough money to fund our asset.
Yeah. Okay. That's the general rate, and that generally works out to be very vaguely half of our rates. The other stuff is targeted rates.
Yep.
I haven't even looked at that. What's happening with them? I presume they're going up too.
Similar amount.
They're similar. Okay. And the amounts we've already determined previously. So they're not out of the blue targeted rates. So they are the rates that we had looked at previously. For example, the Three Waters.
Yeah.
Our targeted rate for that, we had made that we would increase that over time. It makes our rates altogether quite significant for those on lower incomes or those on fixed incomes.
But if you're looking forward, this doesn't change. Like, we're looking at this, you know, next year is going to be another hard call. We're now focused on next year. How can we cut our... And really, we've got to look at level of service because we're going to be faced with this situation again next year. It's just grim.
Yeah, I see why you want to frighten people into action.
This is also the opportunity that we have is to go out and engage with the communities across the district. So you don't want rates increases, so what are we going to cut for the LTP? So the annual plan is the annual plan. This is what it is. Mm. Just to keep the lights on, this is 13.75 in the general rates, and then we've got our targeted rates. But it's that opportunity to inform and make decisions for the next 2 years of our LTP.
So I see for the Three Waters that there's $22 million for Raglan because that's the wastewater upgrade. Is that all that whole project's costing $22 million?
No, it's closer to 26. Yeah. And that's just with wastewater. That's just with our upgrade of our wastewater treatment plant. That doesn't include the potential costs around what our community wants, the land-based treatment. That's another significant cost if that's the way that we are going.
So my question was going to be, is that purely targeted at Raglan ratepayers, or is that spread out across the district?
It's spread out across the district to those who are on the Three Waters urbanised reticulated system.
We've got about 13 or 14,000 wastewater targeted ratepayers.
So we're all
So
paying.
Those 13 14 are
is
paying.
That all?
That's all.
What's the population of the
thousand?
There's 33,000 ratepayers in the district, including rural and business.
Yeah. Yep.
27,000 residential. And 14,000 of them are paying the wastewater, because lots of farmers, and Tamariri doesn't have it.
Yep.
You know, we're on septics and stuff. So 14,000 funding, $24 million here, $100 to $150 million in Huntly. I think
$26 million in Te Kauwhata.
What's happening in Huntly that's so expensive?
Their pond is non-compliant.
Yeah.
And it won't also cover Ahiniwai, the big Ahiniwai development. Part of the condition of that development is our water systems are upgraded.
Upgraded. So they're massive costs across the district. So
this is standards rising.
Part of it, yeah.
Like resource management standards or water quality. Water quality standards are rising.
Yes.
So there's a big question around that. Can we, like, our my whole life and the history of urbanised New Zealand has been one of improving standards.
Yeah.
Are we at a point now where perhaps we can't anymore actually keep improving standards because we don't have the money for it?
We're getting, you know, those questions need to be asked. We cannot. It's interesting. I mean, this is a whole other debate and I don't think we have time, but we're still living like we're rich and we're not.
We're not.
We were rich in the 50s. and I heard Luxon say the other day that with the rail issues in Auckland that this wasn't acceptable in a rich world country. Well, we're actually not.
We're not. And we're only a population of 5.5 million.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're actually wanting gold standard services when we actually don't have the resources to fund that or provide that. So that's why it's really important that our communities across the district engage. If it's not in the annual plan, then have to engage in the LTP, because it will be up to us in governance to make decisions about what services we're going to cut. And people want their roads up to a high level.
Well, yes, we're going to talk about roads in a moment. But the council's done a nice pie graph, or someone has. I think it was the council.
It is. That's part of our
idea. And so people can immediately go in. And sorry, folks. So there's a pie graph for all the spend of the general rates. And you can see clearly that roading's the biggest one. And then the second biggest one is corporate and council leadership. Does that mean your guys pay and all the staff's pay? Is that what that means?
Cause there's a lot of I did drill down because I thought you'd ask this question, but
I've been asked that by other people who've said
Look, it's very hard to interpret because some of the wages costs are in those other areas and roading and parks and things like that. Some of them are in that corporate area, but not all of them. So, but I don't think that's too bad. It's 22% of our budget. It's only on the rate take, it's not on the whole spend of 300 and something million that we're spending, and some of that's depreciation, so it gets complicated. But look, I think our
wages?
It's mostly internal wages and management costs.
And management costs.
But look, it stayed about the same at that 22% for 10 or more years. I think council's management's not too bad. Could be better, possibly, but very tricky one to analyse in detail. And I think people get too hooked up on that, you know. Oh, look at all that waste and management. But I think it's been pretty stable. And look, could we do better? You can always do better. But corporates are notorious, and I put councils in here, at being reasonably inefficient. You show me one that's not. If you want efficiency, go and hire a guy with a truck. You know,
yeah,
but as you get bigger,
the numbers make it
we've got 400 staff, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so, all right, we'll put that there. Someone else wanted to know about area offices and other properties, $9 out of, what's that as a percentage? That's less than 10%. But that's, so this is, council owns buildings, obviously in Narawahia, yeah, there's a lot. We've got our council building here. There's several others around the district.
We've got loads of council buildings across the district.
So is this new buildings or is this just maintenance?
No, this is
all of our buildings.
I'll tell you what they were.
And, you know, so
Mike's got his papers here.
When you're not, you know, so that's not a huge cost when we're looking at
225 million worth of fixed assets.
Yeah.
So we've got to maintain those. So 10 million to maintain them. Well, that's actually pretty low, you know.
But are there any new buildings being built? There's no new offices happening or anything like that.
No new offices. It's just actually the keeping of the offices that we have. Yeah. You know, when we do go to Tuakau, when we will build our resource recovery centre, of course that will come at a cost. And one day in the future, hopefully we will be able to invest in a new dog pound. But it also, we're looking at upgrading the current one that is in Brownlee Ave in Ngarua Wahia. So it's all of those facilities across the district that I don't think that our communities actually understand. You know, we provide a lot of services, but we also need the buildings to host those services. And whether they're our libraries, whether they're our dog pound, whether they're our resource recovery centres, it's actually huge.
Upgrade of Narawahia Dog Pound is a second-rate decision. Ideally, we'd have a new one that was purpose-built, but we can't afford it. Narawahia offices need a major upgrade because they're actually... They're a patched together. They look flash, but they're a patched together building that's got leaky issues, and it needs significant money spent on it. And we know if we do that, we'll just get
pummeled.
because you'll be seen as spending money on yourself.
Well, it's like $33 million on Government House or whatever it is down in Wellington, you know. So
yeah.
Okay, all right. So that's the big picture there. Some specific things. We've been talking for some time about an internal Raglan bus service, and there was going to be a trial. Has that fallen through the cracks? Do we know?
It has fallen through the cracks.
I know that regional council was like, "Oh, we can't do this," and they were not coming to the party. So in this annual plan, that money's gone somewhere else.
Well, it's still allocated for an internal bus service, and I will need to follow up on that, actually.
I thought you were getting a trial. We've just started a trial, two-year trial in Tamahere.
Yeah.
So that's been going ahead, and it's funded by council, and we're going to look at it for 2 years and to see. You need that long a time to see if it's actually viable. It's getting a bit of patronage at the moment. I thought the Raglan one was still on the table. But they're still working out the details. I've found regional council, because I've worked with them a bit at Tamahere, to be very good in this area. Sort of realistic. you know, public transport's a tricky one.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, all right. More to follow up there, but probably still around.
Yeah.
So this is something I picked on at the Raglan Community Board meeting the other day. $200,000 put aside for traffic lights on the bridge. Knowing that won't be a popular move in Raglan since the last set of traffic lights got thrown in the water. and maybe these ones will be fixed to the ground and harder to lift up. But I think my question at the community board meeting did that come from the community or did that come from staff, that idea?
That came from the draft transport strategy for Raglan.
Which has been worked on by the transport section in council.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if you were at the community board meeting when also we're going to have a workshop with our roading staff around the transport strategy.
Because means?
The community board.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. So that's when I'm talking about we as the community board and us with Hazel and Peter and our staff who have had oversight on the draft transport strategy.
Okay. My prediction is that will disappear.
The lights?
Yeah.
Either they will metaphorically or physically disappear like they did last time when they were thrown into the harbour.
If they don't disappear.
As an external view, I think community should have a huge say in that. If they don't want them, they shouldn't have them.
That seems fairly
straightforward. And I think that we will probably get a big stare from the community quite quickly because even the community board members were like, what the heck?
Yeah, well, that was the one thing I asked about because I was like, 200,000, we don't really, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting, like some people complain about our bridge, but when you compare it to other urban areas. Like, we don't really have a big traffic problem. Aucklanders would laugh at us about our 5-minute wait that we have for about 4 weekends a
year.
One of the reasons I love
Raglan is I come out here, there's no traffic. You know, Hamilton's a nightmare.
Mm.
Especially between 8 and 9 and 3, after 3.
Those times.
Yeah. Actually, I do have an update on the Raglan bus service. So this is from Catherine from Regional Council. The extension of the Raglan bus service were scheduled for April due to operational staff constraints. These will unfortunately need to be pushed out to our next round of network changes scheduled for October. So I'm not sure if that actually covers the internal shuttle, but the extension of the current bus services
was going to be part of that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And is that because they can't get enough drivers still?
It's staff constraints. These will unfortunately need to be pushed out to the next round of network changes scheduled for October.
Okay.
What a great plan would be, though, is to do the busy runs in town, which is eight, those schoolie hours, and then come out here for the day with a small bus and run people around, and then go back, get the driver to go back in and do the busy time again. Those sort of options.
That would be efficient.
And we actually did a survey, if you remember, a couple of years ago when we were looking at that, the community board, we did a survey, and it was exactly those sorts of points that people requested, or they could ring up and then, it's a pickup service
Okay, all right, well, that's the buses. Something I want to ask about, and I want to specifically ask Mike this one for a different perspective, because Lisa, you'll be biased, is about getting a structure plan for Raglan, or some kind of plan. And the background for this, Mike, is that, first of all, we've been asking for ages, and people who have now passed on were asking, but there's a specific thing that happened recently that I discovered happening, which is the two big developers in town are having a bit of a debate over where the Raglan Bypass Road might go. And the one on the Coney Farm, they put in their structure plan for the development, and that was objected to by Raglan Land Co, who said, no, we want your street to enter to Hurawai Road there, so then our idea for the road bypass will make sense. And I'm not pointing the finger at the developers. They're just doing what developers do. But at no point in this process has the Raglan community had any input on where a bypass road might go, or even if we want one or not. So having a structure plan
would be good.
One more thing. Last time I looked, we were fairly well down on the list after some other towns. So as a councillor who has to look after other towns and other areas, do you think we're going to get our structure plan pushed up the list?
Straight answer, no.
I like that you're straight.
You know, like council's got a load so high. I mean, look, again, I'll go back to the 50s when we were rich. We bought, all the land for, say, the bridge at Pukiti Bridge. That was all pre-bought. You know, the land out the airport, we used to buy up the land 20 years in advance when we could afford to. What needs to happen for Raglan is that bypass land needs to be purchased now. Your structure plan needs to be put in place. But we could do a plan, but it would be meaningless because we've got no money to go out and purchase the land. I sold some land to the Hamilton Bypass. They bought it a year before they started building, so they paid a premium price. And this is what New Zealand now operates in this manner. When we can afford to do the work, we buy the land. Now, that's really dumb. Because everyone already knows it's going ahead. Developers are pretty smart people, So
they hang out for top dollar for the piece of land.
So as opposed to that structure plan should be in place. We should be buying those corridors, but way before development gets anywhere near it, and have that future proof for 20, 50 years. And that's good planning.
That's how we used to do it.
We used to do it when we were rich.
Yeah.
We can't afford to buy the land now. So we tried to buy a section up on Wainui Road the other day as an intersection, and look, if they wanted more, it fell through because we couldn't get to what they wanted. And that was a strategic...
that was strategic property.
That was a strategic purchase for that bypass,
Oh, right, so that's the point at which it would have come onto Wainui Road.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we couldn't buy it, and the intersection won't be built. But it was a good idea, because even if we never built it, we could have sold the land, and it would have, that sometimes happens. But we can't afford to buy at the prices, current prices.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a very depressing conversation.
It is.
Now,
is there anything good we can talk about?
But we would like a structure plan. So since you're here, I'm saying this keeps coming up. Right,
look, I will advocate with Lisa for it, and there's real merit. And look, it would be good to have a plan. It would be good to have all these developers on the same page. I saw that subdivision recently advertised. I'm looking at it. Where's the bypass road, you know?
Yeah.
And it seemed crazy that we're not working with the developers on that.
Actually, you know? another issue that's probably going to happen there is that's right up against the border with extreme zero waste.
Yes.
And so
we need to
once the houses are there, they'll then potentially complain about having
a
recycle centre there.
Well, that's why we need a bigger
there.
Buffer.
Yes.
So at the moment, the buffer zone proposed is only 50 metres, which actually, I believe it's 50 metres. So what we need to do is be advocating to our planning team and to the developer about increasing that buffer zone to at least 100 metres.
But does council have much control over that? If the developer wants to put sections on that area and the whole farm has been zoned urban now, I believe, can't they just do what they want?
Well, yes and no. They've got to go through a consenting process, and there's a community element to that. You know, that's the whole reason we have the RMA. You know, so they should be talking, and ideally, to get Lisa's extra 50, you'd run the road down the zero waste side. You know, the new bypass road,
and that acts as a buffer. So you know,
and
so
that's
so
also
that
a valley with no view. So
and
for the developer, it's not a great. They're not the first sections that are going to sell anyway. Well, maybe they will. Maybe they'll be cheaper.
As always, the biggest challenge seems to be getting the right people around the table to talk
and do that strategic.
We don't do that very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no. I guess I keep banging on about the structure plan because at least that's something
that
somewhere
something you could,
that everyone can,
you could
can
reference
point to.
And whether we call it a structure plan or whatever, so long as we've got a plan.
Yeah. I'm not picky about that.
It's going to happen.
And I'm aware that different plans have different focuses, but just something.
It's a really good idea for any community to have a long-term plan. I'm talking 50, 100 years. And one of the things I like about Tainui Corporation is they operate on that basis.
Well,
they're looking
the basis of the
50 to 100 years in the future. And that's the way we should be planning. But our whole system is, one, we can't afford it, and two, it seems to be we operate in the short term.
Mm. Or can we do it differently? You know, change our thinking in order to be able to do it differently.
Yeah. Okay, all right, so that's all that. Let's talk about the roads now. At the community board meeting, there were people there complaining about the state of Te Huruwai Road.
Did you go driving on it?
I did. Craig and I drove back that way. And sometimes, you know, you hear people complaining about things at council and they might be exaggerating for effect, but I don't think they were. I don't think I would like to drive my car. We were driving Craig's car, which was an SUV, but even then he was almost stopping before we drove through where the problems were.
Yeah,
And I got an email about that from a resident on that road recently when
you
guys
were
going to be in.
I just
drove it the other day and it's overdue. It's got some nasty.
Yeah, it's got some issues.
And it seems to have just happened as well. So
it sounded like after
a recent rain from what people were saying.
But it is a challenging road anyway, Te Hutuai Road, Waimaunga, and out at the Whangau Coast. And I do feel that we don't focus on those roads enough to put them up to a standard that's safe. And, you know, those roads are actually, they're not dead-end roads. They're really well utilised. And if we were to build resilience in our network, if something were to happen to the bridge here, the Wainui Bridge, the alternative is Te Hutuai Road. And a lot of traffic going up there, and particularly when you go past Dreamview up to Les Corns' farm, that area is really, if I can use the word, crap, and that's quite challenging. And I know it's challenging because you're on a mountain, and the rock formations that have made up Kariwi make that roading network challenging in terms of the repairs, but we do need to invest more in there. And
just
the
needs
same
a good
with
hard cut grade maintenance. It has, you know, it's
and regular,
regular
maintenance.
So, but then we come back to our discussion earlier that council might have to cut its services.
Well,
and roading is the biggest spend of all in the general rate. We didn't even talk about that, but that's the biggest.
But the thing
spend.
Is, that's why we need to go out with the community and what are they prepared not to have. And if people want the roads to a different level of service, then they have to be either prepared to take other things off, other things off that we have and that we like, and are they prepared perhaps to pay more for a higher level of service? That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and we are looking at our level of service around unsealed roads, and Caroline Eyre, who's the ward councillor for the Te Akau Port Waikato area, she's a very strong advocate for this because they've got a lot of gravel roads up there.
Yeah,
and so we are trying to look at our level of service on this, and we are trying to put more. As I've said, we've increased our roading budget in this current enhanced annual plan. We've actually put more money into it. So I'm not sure how much unsealed roads is getting out of that, but hopefully it's definitely not being cut. Hopefully it's getting a boost as well.
Because there was also a letter from residents on Whanga Road about the condition of their road. And, of course, there are a lot more people living out there these days, a lot more
vehicles.
Oh, there's
heaps more. And also those roads are roads that visitors use because it's not – they're not – you know, Whanga Road is not just a road for local traffic. It's actually – it's designated an area that people go out to have a look at the coast. So it's well utilised. And, you know, those people out there – on our unsealed network, the roads are their lifeline, you know?
That's the thing. Like, you look at the council budget and go, oh, you cut back on roads, that's a huge spend. But does that mean you're going to close a road? Like, that's not – no one's going to like that.
No. We are trying to focus on our core business, which is roading and waters. Those areas we're trying to put more money into. We've got these mandates. I feel as a first – term councillors is that we're trying to be a bit everything to everyone, and it's just not achievable.
And
that's my view.
I would agree, actually. There are things that I love, the more softer stuff across communities, but ultimately at the end of the day, we will have to really focus on our core business.
Yeah, well, we'll find out
what that is when our communities tell us for the LTP, you know, after our annual plan, we've gone out with that. Over the next year, our communities need to tell us what they don't want and what they do want and what they're prepared to pay.
Okay. Now, other issues entirely. We're hoping to find out why there was a really bad water quality reading outside the museum around October last year, and there was further investigation happening. Has there been any reports back on that? Council staff had checked out the council networks and it's no, that wasn't the cause of it. And then I think Dennis Amor was saying there's old pipes in there. Do you want to check out the old pipes? He remembers playing them in them as a kid. Has anyone come back and said we've checked those as well yet?
No.
I
think Dennis was probably on the money there. I think it was very interesting. Here's the high readings in the bay, further into the bay, than what's being discharged out there is actually not that bad, that the treatment system actually works pretty well. Mm. Occasionally we've had issues with UVs and stuff, but we've never had untreated effluent discharged. And what's happening by the library there is, I would say, a historical. I would probably go along with Dennis's theory, but it hasn't been proven. No work's been done on it. We don't. The only thing you would do is ongoing monitoring, and I'm not sure if that's been done.
It is. It's ongoing monitoring.
So we should get at our next. We've got a wastewater meeting coming up. And we'll ask that question.
Yeah, the water's governance.
If they haven't done any further testing, and is that ongoing?
Yeah, the testing is ongoing, and regional council is responsible for that. We have done, and I think I mentioned this last time, we have done the CCTV and of the network in Raglan, and there's no problems with that. So it's definitely outside of our network, why we had that anomaly by the museum.
Okay.
But on that, I would, you know, even though we've CC'd our TV and our network, we've got major issues with stormwater inflow.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem.
I was trying to chase that one up for a while, and in the end, I had a private conversation with one of the staff outside the supper room one day after a meeting, and I just said, off the record, is that a problem that you ever get on top of? He said, no, you never get fully on top of it. Like, there's always going to be stormwater ingress into the sewage system. And I know that over the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, there's been various times when council's gone around and done smoke testing and looked for houses where their stormwater is incorrectly connected. But I have a feeling that most of that has been sorted out. Mm. And so the water's getting in somewhere else.
Well, just
like
that
underground, in places we can't see. I don't know what that would mean.
Yeah, look, I was watching at one of the big rain events we had last year, and the manholes. I live next to the little estuary down on Waller Street, and the manholes, the lids were being lifted off by the amount of. So this is a sewer line, which shouldn't have any stormwater in it.
Yeah,
there was enough stormwater coming through to lift that lid off the manhole. You know, that's so there's a lot of, and that's only that catchment there, just down at by the wharf. up on the hill there.
Right. So, okay. Yeah, that's hardly anything.
So, yeah.
But that was in
there was really big rain, but yeah, there was a lot rain. Of stormwater coming yeah. in to the sewer system.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that will always be a challenge for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask about Araro Reserve or the floodgate there, but I doubt there's been time for anything to happen. We've heard that there's
too much. I look at that regularly.
It's too much. Because it lives next door to it.
I'm often talking to the guys managing it because I watch sometimes the wetlands got water in it and sometimes it doesn't. And I say, what's going on? And it's a tricky one because the tides fluctuate, you know, quite dramatically. And so big high tides, the water level will come up higher. And so they try and do a little bit of manual setting, and they don't always get it right, and it's a bit of an art. They changed the gate. They upgraded the gate because the old gate was quite had a big hole in it. And I used to see eels sitting in there. You'd look at it, and there'd be eels that you could see their tails waving at. It was quite cool. But now they fixed the gate, so there's no hole for the eels.
Okay.
But it just adjusting it, they took a little while to get their settings right because it operates a little bit differently. Okay. But I think that system works pretty well, and overall, council are on to it.
And when you get the big tides like we've had recently, you get that flooding that's down by the rugby grounds as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the background for listeners was that there's a designated saltwater marsh in there, and so it means saltwater has to come in.
It has to come in.
But too much was coming in, which is bad for the netball courts and the rugby fields.
The sports fields, yeah.
So some tweaking is at least required.
It's required all the time. I've actually talked to the sports ground people because they've come down and looked at it because they get a bit, you know, it's made, they've had some, quite a bit of flooding. So, it's a balance between the wetland and the sports fields, getting it right. And it's pretty tricky because of the fluctuation in the tides.
In the tides, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right. Speaking of sports fields, is there money for more sports fields in Raglan? Or because there's been that discussion around the soccer fields for a few years now.
There is, and it's a discussion that's ongoing. And, you know, I think that the look at the 30-year plan for Wainui Reserve.
Oh, yes, when he asked about that, I didn't have notes about that. But, yeah, what's happening there?
Yeah, so we are going to be working with staff and setting up a stakeholder group. And when I talk about we, that's the community board as well, with our staff, to look at a 30-year plan for Wainui Reserve. And will that include the option for moving sports fields up to the reserve?
Yeah.
And I think that is the realistic option for our community in terms of that flat land and access to
flat land is an issue.
Adequate area to provide those sports fields, you know. Because where else will it go without us having to go and buy more land somewhere that's flat that can, you know, hold the 250-plus kids on soccer or our growing, you know, league and other facilities that our community wants.
Yeah, and that's just the numbers we have now.
So there's a bit of a structure plan there for sports fields.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of that. You can always talk about council stuff forever, but I think that's most of what I want to talk about. Lisa, Trade Aid is closing. You're still on the...
I'm still on the trust for the Trade Aid.
The trust for the local Trade Aid. Is that a nationwide decision?
It's a nationwide decision. So they're closing all 24 of our stores and focusing really on the online business of Trade Aid. I mean, it's really sad because Trade Aid's been going for 50 years and 35 years in Whangaroa, in Raglan, you know, and there was a group of people, including Eva Rickard, that were passionate advocates for bringing Trade Aid to Whangaroa. So we, in a local context, have a really deep relationship with the fair trade movement across Aotearoa. And, you know, the fair trade movement in New Zealand, we were one of the last, actually, bastions of advocating for fair trade across the globe. So it's a sad day, but, you know, as an organisation, you know, we have to look realistically of what we are putting back into those who are needing that help, and the cost of running our shops, you know, has been a challenge. So how can we make and support those in most need? And we've identified that it would be through our online business, and we will be keeping actually a couple of the shops open in the bigger centres. That has yet to be determined.
But we're not a big centre. Although it was one of the more successful shops, wasn't it, the one here?
There were four out of the 24 that were profitable across the nation. But, you know, we're not a normal retailer, so we operate on different margins and things like that. So it's a really sad day, and I'd just like to do a plug for Trade Aid locally, because we've got a locals only night tomorrow night, 4:30 I believe it starts. So locals, you can go into Trade Aid and you can shop up a storm.
Okay. 4:30 Saturday.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, so it's a sad day, but
And it's just it's a bit of a loss for Raglan too. I mean, things change. They always change, but it's sad to see those sort of shops moving out of town. Yeah.
Especially when they're 35 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realise it had been around that long.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I wasn't even here then.
And it's always been a political hotbed of activism and just doing things what people would say would be the Raglan way. And I know when I was managing the shop, you'd sit outside on the bench seat and you'd offer people any number of opinions.
I participated in that too. Yeah, I know. So, folks, we've been talking to Lisa Thompson, our councillor, and Mike Keir, who's our second councillor, officially the Tamahere councillor, but we're trying to turn him to.
More
of a focus on Raglan.
He is a Raglan advocate. I mean, we advocate not only for our own communities, but we advocate across the for our entire district, really.
Yeah. And so, is there any last thing you want to say about the annual plan, which is the council spending plan? If you've just tuned in, we've been talking about that a lot today.
Get involved.
What do people need to? What do they need to know that they might get them? Oh, I want to know more.
Well, this plan is a done deal. We've spent the year working on it, talking with staff. It's next year now that we're focused on what can we do better. What can we? Where can we cut services? If we're not to have this situation again, what can we do? And that's where the feedback from community would be very valuable.
And there is a community workshop meeting happening.
There's a community next Friday drop-in session.
Yeah.
It's at the supper room from 6:30 p.m. to 8 o'clock. I know it's on a Friday, but there's one at Kōwhai and one at Matangi this evening at the same time. So we're not the only one that has a Friday evening drop-in session. So come and talk to us, and give us your feedback on what services you think that we should cut, or what services we should keep. And if they go onto the Waikato District Council website, you'll see the draft annual plan there. Click on there, and then you can drill down into the details of that. But just get involved.